Hello and welcome to The Corridor here on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario, and podcasting on Spotify and Apple Music. I'm Dinah Jansen, and with me is CFRC Local Journalism Initiative news producer Jesse Bell. This regional news program features news from Kingston and area provided by local and regional journalists through the support of the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Welcome and enjoy.
Hello, and welcome to The Corridor, brought to you by Realtor Kim Purcell of Sutton Group Masters Realty. Connect with Kim today to find a new home tomorrow via kimpurcell.ca. I'm Jesse Bell, filling in this week for Dinah Jansen. Our top story is from CFRC's Local Journalism Initiative reporter, Christina Laurie, and it covers a new residential air conditioning pilot program designed to help vulnerable residents deal with the summer heat.
Hello, I'm Christina Laurie, Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories in Kingston and the Islands. You can listen to CFRC's news programs today in YGK and Kingston Currents on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays at 5 p.m. or subscribe to our podcasts on Spotify and Apple Music. If you have any Kingston news tips you'd like to share, you can reach me at news@cfrc.ca. Council has approved $17,000 from the Environmental Reserve Fund to launch a residential air conditioner pilot program aimed at supporting vulnerable residents through the summer heat. The initiative stems from a motion brought forward in March directing staff to explore options for a program targeting those most at risk, particularly low-income seniors with medical conditions, as extreme heat events are expected to start in June this year. Staff returned with a proposed plan at Council's last meeting. Drawing on similar programs in Toronto, Hamilton, and Peterborough, staff recommended a one-time investment to bulk purchase air conditioning units, with approximately 35 units expected to be distributed. The program will be administered through the city's Municipal Fee Assistance Program, with eligibility limited to Kingston residents age 65 and older living on low incomes in multi-unit housing, and who have been advised by a medical professional to use air conditioning for health reasons. Councillor Connie Glenn, who originally brought forward the motion to look into the program in March, kicked off discussion on the recommendation.
As we've heard, I think, time and time again in this chamber, we're seeing the impacts of extreme heat. Hopefully, we are not going to, as Ms. Kaner mentioned, experience that this summer. However, I'm not particularly hopeful. So I'm hoping that everyone will support this. This is a modest amount of money to help out some of the most vulnerable people, and it's a pilot. It gives us an opportunity to see what kind of positive impact we can have on this situation. So right now we're looking at individuals over 65 with self-declared medical conditions to give them a little bit of relief. So I'm not going to belabor the point. I think it's fairly straightforward. I think it's a compassionate consideration for us. And hopefully we will get a bit of warmth soon. It's a little cold out there. So with that, I hope everyone will support option two. I think it's reasonable. And I think it adds benefit and help for some of the people that are going to struggle the most this summer in the heat.
Some councillors raised concerns about liability and increased utility costs, but there was broad agreement that a pilot program is worth pursuing.
If we don't have a pilot, we don't know the information, and more information is almost always better.
Council approved the program in a 12-1 vote, with Councillor Gary Osteroff opposed due to concerns about liability.
What is the liability that we are carrying? I know it's not a lot of money, but as air conditioners cool a room down, the wires get hot. And most people don't have a clue that many, many houses can't handle an air conditioner, or they put them in by windows. And there is an electrical hazard created. Someone's going to be responsible. So I remain uncomfortable because it's not certain.
Staff acknowledge that demand will likely exceed supply and say the program is designed to prioritize those at highest risk. Installation support will be provided by United Way volunteers. City staff will report back in 2027 with an evaluation of the program's outcomes. Beyond this pilot, the city is still working through its broader extreme heat strategy, with an interim plan for summer 2026 expected to come to council in June. For CFRC News, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative, this has been Christina Laurie.
Thank you to Christina Laurie for that story. Next up, I'll be reading a story by Michelle Dory Forrestel, the local journalism initiative reporter for The Kingstonist, about public outcry from the Napanee community over the proposed high-speed rail line. Thank you, Dinah. A surge of last-minute correspondence ahead of the scheduled Tuesday, April 28th council meeting urged the Council of the Town of Greater Napanee to reject not just a proposed rail route through eastern Ontario, but the high-speed rail project itself. Dozens of emails submitted to council between Saturday, April 14th and Sunday, April 22nd show widespread opposition to the proposed Alto high-speed rail project, with many residents arguing the current debate is being framed too narrowly. While the motion before council focused on expressing support for a northern corridor option, several of the submissions pushed back on the idea that the decision should be about routing at all. Quote, "This isn't about NIMBYism or about not wanting rail and development," wrote Natalie Hebor and Joanne Hutchinson in a joint submission. Quote, "We don't want the Alto plan at all and want them to go back to the drawing board." That sentiment is echoed across multiple letters, reflecting a broader shift in the debate from opposition to specific routes to calls to reconsider the project entirely. Across the correspondence, residents repeatedly raised concerns about environmental impacts, including the disruption to wetlands and wildlife corridors, as well as potential contamination of water systems. Others point to the design of the rail corridor itself, which would be fully fenced and lack ground-level crossings, warning it could sever rural road networks and delay emergency response times. Property expropriation is another recurring concern, with several writers highlighting uncertainty for farmers and rural landowners whose property fall within proposed corridors. Cost also figures prominently. Multiple submissions question the long-term financial implications of the project, often citing its multi-billion dollar price tag, and noting that the benefits would be concentrated in major urban centers with limited value for smaller communities. Some correspondence comes from outside Greater Napanee, underscoring the regional scope of the issue. Emma Hancock, who identified herself as a Brockville resident with family ties to a local farm, urged council to reconsider its position, citing concerns about noise and environmental disruption. Others explicitly warn of economic consequences. Peggy Doran of Plainfield, Ontario, said she frequently shops in Napanee, but would reconsider that if council supports the project. Beyond the substance of the project itself, several submissions take aim at how the issue has been presented to council. In a detailed letter, Heather S. Levy, lead of, quote, Save Stone Mills, No Alto High-Speed Rail, and a member of the Coalition for Better Rail, argued that council was being asked to consider how, not if, the project could be constructed, a framing she said reflects the position of the project proponent rather than a confirmed outcome of the broader decision-making process. Levy also noted the Crown Corporation Alto has been tasked with developing the project, but does not ultimately decide whether it proceeds, a decision that rests with the federal government. Her submission also cautioned against relying on potential add-ons, such as suggestions for a trail alongside the rail corridor, to offset broader impacts, noting that key details about such proposals remain unclear. While municipalities do not have final authority over whether the project proceeds, their positions form part of the consultation process being considered at higher levels of government. Ultimately, Napanee Council voted to reject the Alto HSR proposals for both the northern and southern route. Thank you to Michelle Dory Forrestel of The Kingstonist for that story. Coming up next, we have a story from Brenda Little of CJPE County Radio that covers the arrival of a new fire chief to Prince Edward County.
Prince Edward County has appointed Patrick Howe as the new fire chief. He has served as the interim deputy fire chief for some time and is thrilled with his new position. Chief Howe talks about his background and his view for the future. Chief Howe, where are you from originally?
I grew up in Lanark County. I went to high school in Carlton Place.
And then you joined Hydro One.
Yes.
How old were you when you did that?
So I was just finishing my master's in forestry, so I would have been about 20, 21 years old. So when I went to university, I fully intended on being a forester in the Crown Lands of Ontario. And I went to school for forestry at Lakehead and became a registered professional forester. And although my career kind of moved away from that a little bit, I've still maintained ties with that professional organization. And last week I had the chance to go up to Pembroke. We had our 69th annual AGM and conference. I was part of the organizing committee. And so it was a really cool opportunity to connect with my classmates and my peers in the forest industry, to go out to the forest and look at logging operations and what we're doing to sustainably manage our forests, hear about the amazing logging industry in the Ottawa Valley. But a really special piece for me, the conference was in Pembroke, which is where my grandfather, who's on the wall right there, was the fire chief. And so I was able to walk down to the fire hall, knock on the door and do a little bit of a tour and speak with the fire service members up there in Pembroke, go and see his picture on the wall. And it was a really cool experience.
How did you become interested in firefighting?
Firefighting has a deep history in my family. My grandfather was the fire chief of the town of Pembroke when my mother was growing up. And my uncle was a captain on base Petawawa. And so there was always a bit of the fire culture in my family. I remember when my grandfather passed away, the firefighters participating in the service, and that being a really powerful experience for me as a youngster. And then when I left home, my mother always told me to stop in at the fire hall when you move to a new town. There's always going to be somebody there to say hi and a pot of coffee on, and you get to know the community a little bit. And so when I did move to Prince Edward County in 2011, I stopped in and talked to Deputy Chief Rudder at the time and got my volunteer application right away and got my burn permit and all those things and a nice plastic hat for my youngster. So that's kind of where it all started for me.
What brought you to the county?
I was living in the city in Toronto when I started my work with Hydro One. It was a wonderful experience, but I grew up in rural Ontario and I was starting to miss the country. So I was given the opportunity to move to the Picton Hydro One office, and that's how we started out in the county. I'd never been here before looking for a house, and so I was pleasantly surprised when we settled in at how amazing this community was. I really enjoyed not only the country piece, but also there's a nice blend of culture and amazing things to do. It's easy to entertain family and friends when they come to visit.
What do you think the challenges will be in the future?
Change seems to be the challenge in many ways, right? Our community is changing. Technologies are changing, the demographics of our working population are changing, and how we work is changing. And so having a resilient organization is going to be one of our biggest challenges, and one that's able to adapt to the changes as they come without compromising and sacrificing the tradition and some of the important things that we rely on every day.
Do you have any plans for PR for the community?
Yes, is the short answer. I think public education is one of the most important things that we do in the fire service, all of our fire services across Ontario. Raising awareness around emergency planning and how to stay safe in your home is huge. And so I really want to continue what we have going on in the county right now in terms of our volunteers and full-time firefighters out in the community and sharing those public safety messages. And I see an opportunity for us to do even more of that, whether it's barbecues or participating in focus groups or conversations. I think it's a big part of what we do in keeping the community safe and maintaining a visible presence.
So I'm assuming you have a family here.
Yes. Yes. So I have a wife and three kids and teenagers in my house now, which is fun. So I have a 12-year-old, a 14-year-old, and a 16-year-old. Yeah, we're pretty active in the sporting community. Baseball and hockey are big sports. And my daughter, who's in grade 10, is pretty active on the rugby pitch, which is pretty cool with the school. And my son just was awarded a place on the varsity baseball team with Nicholson. So
nice. Yeah. Nice. What do you like to do when you're not involved with carting kids around or at the fire department?
Yes.
What do you like to do?
Sports are a big part of my life. I play men's hockey, coaching my children as well. In hockey and baseball, I play in the North Shore Slow Pitch League up in Ameliasburg, which is a lot of fun. And if I get time, outdoor sporting or hunting and fishing are a big part of my life if I can make that happen.
Chief Howe gives us the last word.
First and foremost, it feels like a really special opportunity, and I feel very grateful for the support of not only the volunteer and full-time firefighters and the municipal management, but the confidence that's placed in me for public safety within the community. It's a tremendous honor and a lot of responsibility that I'm not taking lightly, but it feels like a really special opportunity for me, and I'm really looking forward to working with the fire service, working with the municipal staff, and working with the community to have a positive impact, to be there when people need us, and to spread the important words around emergency planning and emergency management and what we can all do to keep ourselves and our community safe. It's a really important mission. You know, it's people always talk about you've got to have a corporate mission or a drive that means something to you. And the mission of the fire service and public safety is very important. And it's motivating for me and it drives me to succeed. And it just feels like a really good fit. And I'm just thrilled to be part of it.
For the Local Journalism Initiative, frequencynews.ca and CJPE County FM, I'm Brenda Little.
Thank you to Brenda Little for that story. Coming up next, I'll be reading a story by Keith Dempsey, Local Journalism Initiative reporter for the Brockville Recorder and Times, who presents us with a TLTI news brief. The town of Gananoque has temporarily closed the Gord Brown Memorial Canada 150 outdoor rink after significant damage to the facility's boards, with repairs expected to keep the rink out of service until late May. Town officials say the damage is extensive enough that repairs and replacement parts are needed before the rink can safely reopen to the public. The closure will remain in effect while municipal crews complete the maintenance work required to restore safe playing conditions and prevent future deterioration. According to the town, the repairs are necessary to ensure the facility can reopen safely and continue to serve residents without risking additional damage. Staff are expected to work over the coming weeks to complete the repairs, while the town will provide updates on reopening timelines and facility schedules through its website and social media channels. Municipal officials are asking residents for patience during the temporary shutdown as work continues to return the popular outdoor rink to service. The Township of Leeds and the Thousand Islands is reminding business and property owners that applications for its Spring Community Improvement Plan grant programs close May 29th. The township's financial incentive programs offer grants to support a variety of property improvement projects aimed at encouraging investment and enhancing the appearance and function of local properties. Eligible projects include facade improvements to commercial and mixed-use buildings, accessibility upgrades, and the creation or renovation of secondary dwelling units. Funding is also available for redevelopment, expansion, and conversion projects, along with initiatives connected to agriculture, agritourism, ecotourism, and recreational uses in rural areas. Township officials say the Community Improvement Plan is intended to help property owners invest in improvements while supporting the broader economic development goals across the municipality. Applicants are encouraged to review program requirements and speak with planning staff about potential projects before submitting an application. Residents interested in running for municipal council will have two opportunities this spring to learn more about what the role involves, with information sessions planned in Lansdowne and Gananoque. The Township of Leeds and the Thousand Islands will host the first session on May 7th from 6 to 8 p.m. at 1 Jesse Street in Lansdowne. A second session will be held June 24th from 6 to 8 p.m. in the Council Chambers at Gananoque Town Hall, located at 30 King Street East. These sessions are open to anyone considering a run for municipal office and will provide information on council responsibilities, candidate eligibility requirements, and the election process. Organizers say these sessions are intended to help prospective candidates better understand the demands of public office and decide whether running for council is the right fit. Attendees will also have an opportunity to ask questions and learn more about the role local elected officials play in shaping their communities. Thank you to Keith Dempsey for that story. Over now to Ted Evans, Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CJAI Amherst Island Radio, with a story about the Amherst View Fire Department's acquisition of a new fire tanker.
Hi, I'm Ted Evans, Local Journalism Initiative reporter and news director at CJAI, Amherst Island Radio, 101.3 FM in Stella, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories from Loyalist Township. You can hear Amherst Island Radio's news program, North Shore News, on 101.3 Amherst Island Radio or online at cjai.ca. For showtimes throughout the week, check the schedule on our website at cjai.ca. Loyalist Township Council pre-approved $900,000 in the 2027 capital budget for the purchase of a new tanker for the Amherst View Fire Station. They will also use nearly $85,000 from the 2026 capital budget for the down payment. Council had already approved the purchase of a new tanker for the Amherst Island Fire Station in the 2026 capital budget and were informed the tanker in Amherst View has reached the end of its useful life. With fire apparatus costs continuing to rise each year, staff noted that delaying the purchase would see an increase of at least $125,000 for 2027. Fire Chief Kent Reedman spoke about the importance of getting pre-approval.
There'll be no cost incurred this year, no additional cost incurred this year by the township. This will be all on the 2027 capital budget. So it will save $125,000 plus in next year's budget if we can do it this spring, as opposed to waiting 8 months. There's some significant price increases coming down the pipe here, and we're just trying to get ahead of it.
Councillor Mike Budarek noted the importance of trying to save money.
I just appreciate that the chief's trying to get ahead of this and save us a little money, so it's always appreciated with how tight times are these days.
Councillor Paul Proderick showed his support for the pre-approval.
$100,000 is a good savings, and given the experiences of the last few months, the value of our emergency services cannot be measured in dollars, and move ahead with this as soon as possible.
The Emergency Services Department looks to order the same tanker that was ordered for Amherst Island and remain consistent with their fleet for the next 20 to 25 years. The two old tankers will be sold and are expected to generate nearly $75,000. This will be applied to the fleet reserve for future apparatus purchases. For Amherst Island Radio and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Ted Evans.
Thank you to Ted Evans for that story. Coming up next, we have CFRC's Sports Report. The 2026 CFL entry draft was held last Tuesday night in Toronto. The draft's top prospect, Akeem Mezidor, saw his draft stock plummet after being selected in the first round of the NFL draft by the Los Angeles Chargers. Mezidor's NFL commitments opened the door for some other elite Canadian university prospects to climb the rankings. Ultimately, it was Winnipeg-born offensive lineman Giordano Vaccaro who heard his name called first by the Ottawa Redblacks. Vaccaro began his football career with the University of Manitoba Bison before transferring to the NCAA's Purdue Boilermakers. A compact, powerful player, Vaccaro will have an opportunity to start on day one for the 4-14 Ottawa Redblacks. With the second pick in the 2026 draft, the Toronto Argonauts took the first U Sports player off the board, selecting Queens tackle Nicholas Hennig. This second overall selection capped off a meteoric rise for Hennig, who just 2 years earlier was not viewed as a viable pro prospect. In 2024, Hennig made the switch from H-back to tackle and proved to be a revelation for the Gales, racking up two all-OUA selections and an all-Canadian nod. A remarkable athlete, scouts fell in love with his long, strong frame and quick feet. Hennig is the highest drafted Queens Gales player since 2010, when standout linebacker Shamari Williams was picked by Saskatchewan with the first overall pick in that draft. Hennig also accepted NFL minicamp invites from the Indianapolis Colts and the Las Vegas Raiders. Quebec's Daniel Jabome was the first defensive player off the board, going third overall to the Edmonton Elks. Jabome had a productive four-year career with Rutgers in the NCAA, distinguishing himself as an excellent tackler with an underrated ability to rush the quarterback. The rest of the first round played out as expected, with a number of NCAA athletes taken in rapid succession. We'll pick things up in the fourth round, where Queens linebacker Justin Pace was drafted 35th overall. A multiple-time all-conference player for the Gales, Pace turned in a solid combine performance which, combined with three seasons of elite play, helped him rise up draft boards. He will join former defensive battery mates Silas Hubert, Olivier Mouembi, and Darian Newell in the green and gold. The Calgary Stampeders would complete the tricolor trifecta in the seventh round with the selection of defensive lineman Stephen Capea. Though Capea is undersized for his position, he possesses an impressive array of speed rush moves and a sideline-to-sideline level of athleticism. Capea joins fellow Yates Cup champion Ashton Miller-Melançon in Cowtown. Though the 62nd overall pick will have his work cut out for him to make the day one roster, adversity is nothing new for this young man who began his life in a refugee camp fleeing a civil war. regardless of where his football career goes, it's been one remarkable journey for the man known as Scary Steve. Today's edition of The Corridor is brought to you by Kim Purcell of Sutton Group Masters Realty. Learn more about Kim and local listings for your new home via kimpurcell.ca. Coming up next, we have the Environment Canada Weather Report for the Kingston region. This is your Environment Canada Weather Report for the Kingston region. Tuesday, May 5th, 15 is your high with a 91% chance of rain, and that will cool things off quite a bit heading into the overnight, dropping down to just 6 degrees. Wednesday, May 6th, chillier day here in the city of Kingston, daytime high of 8 with a 64% chance of precipitation. Thursday, May 7th, 9 is your high, and believe it or not, more rain in the forecast, a 60% chance of rain here in the city of Kingston, going to feel closer to 5 degrees, so quite chilly. Friday, May 8th, a little bit of sunshine, but still about a 65% chance of precipitation in the afternoon, 8 degrees your high. Moving into the second weekend in May, Saturday, May 9th, 10 degrees, sunny. But once again, a 55% chance of rain in the forecast, and that remains consistent into Sunday, May 10th. 11 degrees is your high, partly sunny with a little bit of rain in the afternoon. And then kicking off the start of next week, Monday, May 11th, 12 degrees is your high, mostly sunny with a mix of cloud.
And that's a wrap for this week's edition of The Corridor, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Don't forget to visit CFRC.ca for the latest in local and regional news headlines, concert and events listings, and more. You can also follow CFRC on Facebook and Instagram at CFRC Music and on Twitter X at CFRC. You can support CFRC and its independent news programming by donating via CFRC.ca. We'll be back next week with more in local and regional news. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for listening to this podcast produced at CFRC 101.9 FM at Queen's University in Kingston, Ontario, situated on the traditional territories of the Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee peoples, and brought to you by the generous support of Smith Engineering.
When it comes to Kingston real estate, local experience matters. Kim Purcell is an award-winning realtor born and raised in Kingston with over a decade of experience and 100 five-star reviews. If you want honest advice and results you can trust, choose Kim. Visit kimpurcell.ca today for more information.